On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
So the second you sent me that, I think I've like gag reaction of no, thank you.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Tall Can Audio. I am your occasional host, Michaela Schreider, joined as always by my co-host. I will give him the title of co-host, Matt Robinson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. Little Saturday afternoon podcast. I'm ready to go.
All right.
In the sidecar again. I kind of like it over here.
In the sidecar. You're right. Put your feet up. Relax. I'll take it from here.
Perfect.
If you are interested in listening to a previous show of Tall Can Audio, you can check out episode 745 with none other than TSN's James Duffy. Maybe you've heard of him. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. All right, Matt, let's get to the good stuff. What are you drinking today?
Okay, so I'm just looking at this again as I crack it. I think I'm about to be sad. This is a Mill Street Big Little Lager, it's called. And it says it's a light lager, and I'm fine with that. I don't know what I was expecting. It says here 3.5%, and that's Saturday afternoon, a little lighter than I'd like to be right now. But that's okay. I should have known that looking at it, but here we are, the Mill Street Big Little Lager. Yourself?
I am cracking into...
Oh, a
Goose IPA from, of course, Goose Island.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that both of these products are Budweiser products, technically owned by Labatt, which is owned by Anheuser-Busch / Budweiser. Not technically craft beer, and we know that, but we are drinking it intentionally in honor of Budweiser, who is one of the prime sponsors of the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association, the PWHPA. Which, as many of you may or may not know, is a group of basically the most notable women's hockey players in the world who banded together in pursuit of a league that is fair and equitable and supports players properly. And there was a pretty big announcement this week where Secret Deodorant joined on as a sponsor for $1 million, which is the largest corporate donation ever made in women's hockey. So it was some pretty big news. And,
do you think they'll ever tell us which deodorant?
Well, we know it's at least secret.
Oh, I get it.
There it is.
It's not a secret.
Not a secret. The secret. The only secret.
My dad will enjoy that joke. Literally no one else in the world will.
It is a dad joke.
For sure.
After all. And Budweiser is one of the other kind of prime sponsors or donors of the group. And they were obviously very happy and vocal of their support of this. So I thought, you know, why not make it topical? And I'm not a huge fan of Budweiser beer.
Right.
So it's not often that I will crack open a Budweiser knowingly, but I do want to support them as a company given their support of women's hockey. So I thought, I love Goose Island and I love Goose IPA. I spent my bachelorette party actually at the original Goose Island location in Chicago. So I have a very special place in my heart for Goose Island.
Your bachelorette party sounds like way more fun than most bachelorette parties I've heard.
Oh, yeah. We went to Chicago, we went to Goose Island, and we went to a Cubs game. So it was basically a bachelor party.
Yeah, seriously. That's awesome.
And then fittingly, I got married at Mill Street.
Really?
So, the one here in Ottawa, yep.
They got a gorgeous facility. I've spent a birthday or two over there. Maybe I'll get married
really
there someday. I don't know. But for now, just
one
birthdays.
Can dream,
yeah,
Matt,
exactly.
One can dream. The beautiful stone building, mm-hmm. like right on the water, just, and I will say, like, shout out to Mill Street. They hit everything out of the park, but, the two beers here, while, like I said, I don't often reach for a Budweiser beer. There's a lot of beers that fall under the Budweiser umbrella that I'm a big fan of. And obviously
In
my life a lot. No, it's okay.
I think we should touch on what this announcement could mean, for the association. But before we do, before they were bought up by Labatt, and this is something Rob and I have talked about on the pod before, were you a Mill Street? Maybe it's a stupid question. You got married there. Obviously, you weren't against Mill Street, but were you much of a fan? And has your opinion changed? Do you drink it more or less often based on the fact that they've kind of been snagged up now by somebody else?
Yeah, that's a good question, because Mill Street, even when I started drinking craft beer, Mill Street was really, like, I think they were maybe a year or two away from being bought. Like, it wasn't long before that that I started getting into craft beer. And Mill Street was the beer that if you went to a bar and they had a crappy beer selection, they maybe at least had Mill Street. And that was, like, if they didn't have any other craft beer, Mill Street was the one you'd go with.
Sure.
And I like Mill Street, like, you know, on a hot summer day, a Mill Street Organic is kind mm-hmm. of a nice, refreshing beer. It's not the first, you know, light lager I'll reach for.
Right.
But I do like a lot of the beers that they have that are unique to the brew pub here in Ottawa. So the Portage Ale, which you can sometimes get in the LCBO mm-hmm. in a package or a variety pack.
Right.
They only have it at the actual brewery itself regularly. It's one of my favorite beers. I really, really like it. I think it's their cream ale technically, and it's very light, but like it's a very nice beer. It's probably my favorite Mill Street beer. I actually just very recently tried their Cobblestone.
Okay. See, I loved the Cobblestone for quite a while.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about this before. I'm not a huge stout fan, but I'm slowly starting to get more into it. Love Guinness. I tried the Cobblestone and I want to go buy more of it. Like, it was delicious.
We were buying it by the growler at their little store at the location here and taking it with us wherever we went. I also got into the Tank House for a while. And I got to tell you, I've bought it less often since the buy up by Labatt. And I don't know. I bet you, and I'm sure it's just me, but I'm sure they would tell you nothing's changed about the way they make it. But it tastes different. It tastes different. And maybe it's just in my head because it's now owned by one of the big boys or something. But I just find I reach for it less often. And like you said, often when you can't find anything else, there would be a Mill Street Organic or maybe a Tank House, because, like I said, I was quite into that one for a while. And it's the one I feel like has changed the most. There's just something a little different about it. And I am willing to consider the possibility that I've just gotten snobby about it now and there's nothing different. But there's just something that's a little off. And I do find I buy it way less often than I used to.
Yeah, no, and I don't think you're alone in that, because I remember being super bummed out when they got bought.
Yeah.
And I think most craft beer fans probably were. Like, it was the biggest craft brewery in Canada. It was guaranteed to be in most places mm-hmm. when they didn't have anything else, and it was kind of a go-to. And I think that also, unfortunately, made it inevitable that it was eventually going
to
happen.
You are the top option to be bought.
Exactly. And I will admit that I've suspected that many times that I've drank it since. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Does this taste different? But the reasons I get Mill Street are often, like their brew pubs are, whether you're going to the one here in Ottawa or even the one in Toronto mm-hmm. in the Distillery District, like, they're such cool locations.
They are, yes.
Really cool ambiance, decent food. But, like, you know, you go to a restaurant 9 times out of 10, like, atmosphere is one of the top things, right? And Mill Street often surrounds itself with really cool atmosphere.
Well, they're right there in the brewery district or whatever, there in Toronto, whatever they call it. I've been there a couple times because I've been to some concerts down at it used to be the Docks. I forget what it's called now, but it's within walking distance. And you can have a couple of pints and walk. And like you say, it's kind of a cool place to hang out. I normally feel like everyone there is more hip than me at this point, but I'm still willing to go. The Ottawa one, like you said, down on the water, it's a cool place. Even if you just go for a couple pints and some wings on a summer afternoon, it's a cool spot. And so I have been disappointed, but I'm probably being a little snobby about it, I'm willing to admit.
It's one of those things where, like, you want the businesses you support or the breweries you support to do well. And then when they get too big,
it's like your favorite band, right?
Exactly. Then they go mainstream.
Right.
And
I liked them before they were cool. Yeah. Oh, who cares, right? Like
but
now
you want
everyone.
Them to be successful. Yeah.
But you also want them to be just mine. Like you kind of try to walk this weird fine line of, you know, and so, yeah, I don't know. And it's interesting as we kind of circle back around the chain, right? Those, what do they call them? Those little square blocks the kids play with, the smaller one inside, the little bit bigger inside, a little bit bigger. And so Mill Street up by Labatt, and then they have been obviously owned by Bud, and Budweiser, yeah, makes this donation to, or is a supporter of the, well, I always mess up the letters. Professional Women's Hockey Players Association. I know there I've got the words right. I always mess it up when I try to do
as an acronym. It really is alphabet soup. Like the PWHPA, it's a mouthful.
What did you think? Like of let's, I guess Secret is the one that is the big news today or this week. I was surprised, maybe just because it's not the brand that you would expect to get behind a hockey tour like this. And you know, if you'd have told me it was Nike or Bauer or what, ESPN or the NHL, right? Anything like that, you go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I got to be honest with you. I think it's great news, but I was surprised where it came from.
Yeah, it's kind of random.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's one of those brands that
Cheerios
you just,
sponsors
like,
the, you're like, all right, yeah. Cool, let's go.
When it comes to hockey, you're used to, you know, Gatorade and Adidas or Bauer or Reebok. I guess Adidas less so. And to see Secret pop up, you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Secret's been pretty supportive of the PWHPA since they started. I know they.
Oh, you just buzz that off like it's nothing.
I have women's hockey top of mind a lot in my life. They were one of the supporters of the first tour that they did, which was called the Dream Gap Tour. And this donation is now to fund the next round of that. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that will look like in a pandemic world.
Right.
But what the PWHPA did last year was they went on this tour and they went to various cities throughout North America and they showcased, they called them a showcase. So they would have like, not tournaments, I guess smaller tournaments. They'd break out into like 4 or 6 teams and they would have round robin tournaments for the weekend in the city and, you know, bring out a bunch of young kids or fans in general who wanted to, because it's the top, you know, female players in the world. It's the Hillary Knights, the Murray Philip Poulins, the Brianna Deckers. Like, it's who we watch in the Olympics every 4 years, just kind of being showcased as part of this this association and this tour. And the whole thing is meant to promote the women as players and the talent that they have and really get them to a place where they can create a league that they view is fair and pays players accordingly and allows them to, you know, be athletes and not have to have full-time jobs on the side and, you know, give them the support they need to be the best athletes they can be. They don't believe that exists in North America right now. And that's why I mean, this is just my personal opinion, but I believe that's probably part of the reason why the CWHL disbanded and folded. I think they saw that what they were doing wasn't equitable, wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
And they wanted something better. So they knew that they had to do this in order to create something better long term. And then shortly after that, the boycott of all professional hockey in North America happened with these women. They banded together, created the PWHPA to try to advocate for themselves and for other young girls who were hopefully going to one day grow up and play in a league that allows them to be the best athletes they can be. And that's all what this is about. So it was huge news because you just like it's the largest corporate donation for women's hockey to date. And that says something because it's only $1 million, right? Like, it gives you an idea as to how much the sport is funded. But it's corporate sponsorship like this that I think is going to bring women's hockey to the next level. Because that's really, I mean, it's the same with men's hockey, right? Like, these athletes are supported by corporations.
Sure, of course.
And their sponsors. And that's what allows them to train and to dedicate their time to honing their skills and developing their game. And now we need that in women's hockey as well. So I think it's one more step towards, I think, where we're trying to get with women's hockey.
What did you make? And we didn't talk about this beforehand that it would come up, so I apologize for putting you on the spot. What did you make of the commissioner of the National Women's Hockey, the Women's National, again, I'm doing the alphabet soup thing. Bail me out here.
The NWHL?
The NWHL, yeah. The commissioner, she stepped down, I guess it might be closer to 2 weeks ago now, and there had been some competition between it and the Canadian Women's Hockey League at the time, and then, as you said, the boycott that came in with the PWHPA and the folding of the CWHL, you know, we're not going to play anywhere until it's fair, and there was some hard feelings there. They had kind of separate business models. What did you make, if anything, of the commissioner stepping down, and does that mean anything in terms of maybe that league starting to come around to more the position that the PWHPA has?
That's a good question, because it's, I feel like every time something like that happens, there's also something that happens on the other side to make me think that we're not getting any closer to that.
Right.
And Toronto getting a team, like when Toronto got a team, as happy as I am, I'm constantly torn with the NWHL, because I want the sport of women's hockey to grow. But I have to think that it means something that the best female hockey players in the world don't want to play there.
Yeah.
And they have played there. Hillary Knight, Brianna Decker, Megan Duggan, they played there. And then, at least in Brianna Decker and Hillary Knight's case, chose to come back to the CWHL and then join the PWHPA when the CWHL eventually folded.
Right.
Right? Like there's some reason, and I don't know what it is, why these women don't want to play for the NWHL. There's something in that model that I don't think they like. And they have been vocal, but also pretty, they've been keeping their cards close to their chest, at least in terms of why that is. And mm-hmm. So I don't know, but I don't know what to make of the commissioner sending down. Danny Ryland, who was the commissioner who had stepped down this week, she was formerly with the CWHL. She mm-hmm. stepped away and created the NWHL, and that's what kind of sparked the competition between the two leagues. I've always said that a two-league model is not going to grow the sport the
no,
way we want
to. No, can't be competing
it.
Inside right now, right?
Like, and I recognize that, you know, there was a time where the NHL had
WHA.
Oh my God, it's WHA. Thank you. You know, there was two leagues of men's hockey for a while, mm-hmm. and then they joined together. And you know, it has happened. And I'm not singling out women's hockey that way, but I think if we are going to grow it, I think most and all the players have agreed we need a single league to grow this sport, and they don't feel that the NWHL is that,
right?
And that's why they're part of this boycott. If they did, I think they'd be playing for it.
Yeah.
And it puts me, I'm always torn, because as much as, you know, Toronto gets a team in the NWHL and I'm happy and I want the sport to grow, but at the same time, there's something that just says to me, there's a reason why these players aren't playing there. And what is that? I don't know. But obviously, this might not be the model that's going to work.
Right.
What has to happen for some sort of agreement to be put in place where all these women can play together? Because I want the women who are playing in the NWHL to have somewhere to play, mm-hmm. too. I'm not criticizing them for not stepping away and not joining the PWHPA, because, you know, who knows what's going on, and you know, they deserve somewhere to play too. And
yeah, they're not maybe established yet. Maybe they need to keep
exactly.
playing.
Exactly.
Right? Everybody's got their own circumstances, and it's really interesting to hear, you know, that take on the Toronto team coming in, because as you're saying, like, there's been a lot of talk that maybe the NHL isn't willing to get involved and help sponsor and help form a WNHL. As long as there is leagues up and running, they don't want to be perceived as stepping on other leagues. They didn't want to pick sides between the NWHL and the CWHL. And that's whatever, fair enough. If you couldn't work that out politically, I think that's all fine. But then you see the NWHL expanding and putting a new team in Toronto. You're like, okay, so they're not preparing either to step back and come together. Like, they're continuing to expand with their own thing. And so while it's great to see another team and more jobs for these players and things like that, it also might be an indicator that we're not getting any closer to this solidarity that might be needed to get this done, right? Like,
exactly. That's my concern. And that's all I want. I don't know what model that looks like. I don't know who is running it, but I just want all of these players to have somewhere to play.
Yeah.
And for me as a fan, to have somewhere to watch them selfishly. Sure. Because I love watching them play, but it just looks like we're nowhere near that, unfortunately. As much as there was a good sign this week in the sponsorship from Secret, you know, who knows where we're going with Danny Rylan stepping down in the NWHL. Who knows what that means?
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting story to follow for sure, because in the moment it felt like, wow, that's really big news. And then it's kind of been quiet since. So we're still sort of waiting to see what that could mean. And I got to tell you, when I first saw that she was stepping down, I went, okay, like maybe that's an obstacle. And I don't mean that to be insulting to her. She has one vision of how this should go, and other people have another vision. If she's decided, okay, my vision no longer matches up, I'll step aside, that's admirable. But we still just, we don't know. I think it means something. There's a reason she had to step down, and we don't know what that is yet. So I'll be fascinated to see. I think all sports are being punished hard right now inside the pandemic, and women's hockey is no different. So things are moving maybe a lot slower than we'd want them to. But that's going to be an interesting one, I think, to keep an eye on, because it means something. We just don't know yet what.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I feel like is like that every time news has come out in women's hockey for the last little while, I feel like that's been the consistent trend. Like, it means something.
Yeah.
We don't know what. Right. So we'll find out. We'll
follow the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of sports, and obviously 2020 being a tough year on several sports leagues, the MLB is not immune to that. Apparently this week, the World Series has drawn record low viewership, which in any other year, I don't think this would be overly surprising. I feel like we have this conversation every year with the MLB where the playoffs and the World Series, the viewership isn't quite where it used to be. But in 2020 in particular, with the pandemic and everything going on, I mean, were you overly surprised to learn this?
Well, and the other factor is when Tampa is one of the teams, you're like, how much of an audience are they really bringing either? So I don't know how much to read into it, but when you put it in context with the Stanley Cup being way down, NASCAR is way down, it means something. And are we just not used to the baseball playoffs? Don't have this excuse. I was going to say, are we not used to watching these sports and these events at this time? We are absolutely used to watching the World Series in mid-October. So they don't get that cop out, but I'll be interested even when the Masters come up here in a week or two, or whenever that is. No one watches the Masters in November. That's not how this goes. And so there's something going on. And we're also in the middle of a presidential election. When you look at the NASCAR numbers, and I'm not a NASCAR guy, but they're well down as well. Is that how many of those NASCAR drivers have stepped up and, you know, held the line on social issues and stuff for an audience that isn't interested in those social issues? I know I'm generalizing a bit with NASCAR, but everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. So,
oh, yeah.
I wonder, right, what is causing all this? Are we too stressed about the politics and the election coming up? Are we just, we got our own stuff to worry about with the pandemic and those sorts of things? I'm not sure what to make of it, but it's not just the World Series. If you were to tell me, you know, that Tampa isn't drawing in the World Series, you go, yeah, no, I get that. Right? Tampa doesn't draw in Tampa. Why would they draw for the rest of the nation? But it fits into this context that people aren't watching sports right now. And maybe that shouldn't be surprising given the nature of the pandemic and the other concerns that people have on their plate right now. But this doesn't seem to be isolated to one sport. I don't know what to make of it. Do you have any kind of, I don't know, better take than I do?
No, I'm kind of where you are in that, like, there's a million different factors that could be contributing to this. Like, 2020 is not your average year, and none of us are living in a
don't let it become one,
right,
please.
Yeah. Honest to God. But we said this with the NHL playoffs when the Stanley Cup Finals, I believe, were drawing a much lower crowd, or viewership anyway, than we were used to. And again, with the MLB, I feel like we often have this conversation because it is the baseball in general, but the MLB is in need of some sort of refresh to attract younger viewers. And we have this conversation every year, and it doesn't surprise me at all that that combined with the fact that we're not living in an average year and people are not watching sports the way they normally are, is probably led to a disastrous, you know, perfect storm, if you will, for viewership of the World Series. But at the same time, you're right. We're used to watching the World Series at this time of year. This is when you watch the World Series. Yeah. This is like the one slice of normalcy we've had in 2020. So I don't think that it gets to be as easy of an excuse. I think Tampa is certainly a factor. Like we talked before with the Jays and Tampa series, like we're surprised it's not an 11 a.m.
Right.
Given their viewership. But then at the same time, you know, you've got LA and the Dodgers are one of the biggest franchises in the league.
Yep.
And you've got to think that that has to counterbalance a little bit the viewership, but evidently not. And I mean, I'm just sitting here hoping to God that Tampa doesn't win, because we do not need a repeat of what the Tampa Bay Lightning did to celebrate their win. I just hope the Dodgers are smarter with whatever they do with their World Series win. And yeah, I said it, Rays fans, all three of you. But I'm just hoping, like, no more Florida teams winning, please.
No,
you've shown what you do.
Right. And I guess that is it. Like, how deep do you want to dig? Like, the Stanley Cup final ratings being down again, it's Tampa and Dallas. They're not traditional hockey markets. Does that impact this at all? Or is it, you know, just a standard? It is like the World Series numbers, they're not just low, like they're record setting low. They're all time bad. Like it's incredible. And I really thought in some cases here that people would be ready for a distraction from politics, from the pandemic, from whatever. And sports is easy. Sports is whatever you tune in and you watch. But maybe it's not. Maybe you watch and you go, well, here's Tampa and LA playing in Texas, you know, and in front of no fans. You're like, okay, like, this is still not normal. This isn't really what I'm used to watching. I don't know, but it's been strange. And to see so many of them so down, and, you know, again, I'm not a NASCAR person. I don't know if the Kansas race is supposed to matter or not, but again, not just low, but like historically low, worst numbers since 2000 on network television. And that's got to mean something.
Exactly. Like, and again, it kind of comes down to the same thing with the women's hockey news. Like, I know it means something.
Yeah.
But I don't know what. Well, and I kind of want to have this conversation again next year when, I mean, who knows where we will be.
Yeah, God willing, we're still here.
Hopefully we're still here and having this conversation. But like, I want to see, you know, is this a trend or is this two lesser known teams, at least in the case of the NHL, not so much the MLB, but, you know, Tampa in either case is not the biggest franchise in the league. Is this a product of what is on the field or the ice, or is this a product of the trends that we're seeing just with the viewing trends given what 2020 is? And I think the MLB is less shielded from that because we are used to watching the World Series at this time of year. But I would be curious, you know, where would we be if this was a Yankees Dodgers series?
I think that's interesting. And one of the sports that is sort of bucking the trend a little bit, I imagine you didn't watch it this afternoon, was UFC 254. And you know, they were one of the first sports to get up and running again, and I criticized them quite a bit in the spring when they were trying to do it. One of the reasons that this fight was in the afternoon was because it was held on Yas Island off Abu Dhabi, because back in the spring, they started building what they were calling Fight Island, because there was nowhere to fight in America, right? And they were able to get one or two cards done with American fighters, but nobody else could get in or out of the country with the border closed. None of your international fighters were able to compete. And they've had some big cards, even in front of empty buildings. And this looks like, on early returns, like it'll be one of them. You know, a couple different sources predicting that this will have 1 million pay-per-view buys, which is big. They've done it twice this year, but it is, that would be above average to have 3 1 million buy cards inside 1 year. And, you know, even some of the other ones, it's a different type of sport where maybe, you know, you have fewer bodies. It's not teams of 20 NHL players or 40 NFLers or whatever it might be having to tour around together. You bring in your guy and your couple coaches and you can get this done. And it's still sort of one-on-one. It doesn't look that different. It was strange early on. You could hear every shot land at where you normally wouldn't with the crowd cheering and stuff, but it's been fascinating to watch. And this was an interesting card today. For people who haven't heard the news, Khabib did defeat Justin Gaethje in the second round and immediately stood up in the octagon afterwards, took his gloves off, which is usually signifies he's done, and then announced that he was retiring. And
wow.
Yeah, it was a powerful moment. They're two very different kinds of fighters. Khabib is the, like, he can strike a little bit, but he'll take you down and he'll choke you out, or he'll make you tap, or he'll wrestle you. Whereas Gaethje, he can wrestle a little bit. He was a collegiate wrestler. But he fully admits coming into all his fights, he's like, I want to create a car crash, and I believe I can survive that better than you. And he's just going to throw bombs. He's going to strike. He's going to look to just stand and bang for as long as he can. And eventually he got taken down by Khabib. And at that point he was going to be in big trouble. And it looked like he was going to take him to an arm bar, ended up in a triangle choke. And one of the grossest parts of it, you don't like to see it at all in the sport. The ref missed three different attempts. Justin Gaethje tried to tap out and the ref missed it every time. And eventually just got put to sleep, like choked right out. Which, you know, the fight was going to end either way, but he did not need to be taken out or unconscious like that. So, little controversy there, but Khabib was full value for the win, and UFC in that regard, maybe a little differently set up than some sports. If you just tell people, here's some big name fighters and we're going to put them on in the middle of a day on a Saturday, looks like people were ready to show up.
So I have a few questions, because I you're right. I don't follow UFC very closely. I don't know very much about MMA in general. So I may ask like some very basic questions, but is it normal to have it seems like a high profile card at this time of day? I feel like they're usually late at night.
Yeah, it's almost always 10 o'clock. They like the, and it's typically because they hold them, a lot of them, in Vegas. And yeah. So, you know, it's kind of prime time in Vegas. It gives everybody enough time to get drunk on a Saturday night. And if you weren't totally sure you were going to order the fight after a couple beers, you're like, whatever, take my $50 and you buy the fight, or you go to the bar. That is the business strategy for sure. And it works. They run these amazing promos that look like these guys are fighting for the ruler of the universe. And it's just two guys in their underwear fighting over nothing. But they do the promos so well that you buy, and it's great. So this is uncommon. Two things to consider. Like I said, they were in Abu Dhabi, so it's 10 p.m. in Abu Dhabi when this card started. Now, they still do normally try and lean towards North America. So we have seen like fights start at 6 a.m. in Abu Dhabi to get that 10 p.m. start in North America on the East Coast. And when you go over there to fight, you just have to get yourself on that clock. But I think one of the reasons they left at this time was because Khabib, who is a Russian, is amongst the biggest stars in the world. And it probably doesn't feel like it here, but when you go to the Middle East, when you go to Japan or China, when you go to Russia, Europe, like, he is as recognizable as any athlete in the world. They wanted to keep him as close to prime time in Russia as well, right, to try and sell some buys there. So I think that's a big part of it. And a Saturday afternoon here, that will, I think, impact some sales, but it might impact it the other way, right? People who wouldn't have stayed up. I had two or three people mention to me on Twitter today that, oh shit, I thought I was gonna have to stay up tonight, middle of the afternoon. Awesome, right? Like, I can do that.
That's true.
So it could go either way, but yeah, it was interesting to see a fight this big in the middle of the day like that.
I mean, I get that business model. As someone who mistakenly put Amazon Prime on my phone once, I know the feeling of a couple drinks in going, yeah, sure, I'll buy that.
Sure. It's just one button. Add to cart. You're like, yeah, just do it. Just do it.
It's a great business model. They've taken so much of my money. But for the UFC, I mean, that is very, very smart. In terms of, like, this seems like a pretty big moment. Like, where does this rank for UFC history?
So he came into this fight today 28-0. Most people, this is Khabib, and everyone just calls him Khabib because his last name, I'm going to do it once and then I'm going to put it to bed. You've all heard me trip over enough things already in this show. Khabib Nurmagomedov, and it's a lot. So he's just Khabib. And he comes into this fight at 28-0. Everyone did agree that Justin Gaethje was a unique challenge for him with the boxing and the striking that Gaethje could bring. But nobody gets to 28-0. Everybody has a bad day at some point, right? Like, usually maybe you get off and running at 2 or 3-0 and you're like, wow, this kid looks like he's got something. And then a veteran knocks you out, or you make one mistake and he gets you in the armbar and you have to tap, and you can go to 28-2 or something like that. But to get to 28-0 is unheard of. And he's kind of now in that pantheon of George St. Pierre or BJ Penn, like the greatest fighters ever. And to see him just decide at the end of this fight, yeah, I'm done. And he said it, and it, obviously in some broken English, but he's like, this was my dad's dream. This was my dad's passion. I don't know how to do this without him. And so it was a unique moment. Maybe down the road when the smoke clears and you're a little less emotional, this is all pretty raw. This is his first fight since he lost his dad. Maybe he rethinks it. He's only 32 years old, but he does feel like the type of guy where, no, that's it. I'm done. I can go out undefeated, 29-0. I've beat everybody you've put in front of me, the biggest names, the biggest talkers, the best strikers. Like, he's taken out Conor, who everyone, because Conor's the biggest name, Conor McGregor, everyone assumes he's that good. He's really just that big of a mouth. And that's what sells pay-per-views and makes money. So fair enough.
Exactly.
But, that's part of the business. But I don't know. It is. It's a huge moment. I didn't see this coming, but you know, there it is. I'm not really sure down the road whether we'll see him again or not, but everything that I read quickly before we jumped on here after the fight was, if he says he's done, he's done. He's that type of guy.
Yeah. I do like when athletes, and I don't know where he is on the trajectory of his career, but it sounds like he's kind of at a place where he could keep going for years if he wanted to.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I like it when athletes step down where they feel either, A, I'm at my prime and mm-hmm. it's never going to get better than this, so screw it, I'm out.
Yeah.
Or B, I want to leave before, you know, I've overstayed my welcome.
You look at it, right? Like, he's looking ahead at what could be next, and Gaethje was clearly the number one guy. He's destroyed everybody now, and so how long do I have to go fighting guys that I know are well beneath me before I get another really good challenge that sells a lot of pay-per-views, which is how these guys get paid? You know, if you're the main event on a card that sells a million buys, like, he's going to make some money off that. So how long do you hang around? If you don't have the passion for it anymore, do you kind of take the next guy too lightly because you know he's a step down? And all of a sudden, instead of being 29-0, retiring undefeated, you're 29-1, having lost to some nobody, and now you're, you know, there's a legacy thing to it. And it is one of those sports, a lot of people will tell you, once you're not sure you want to do it anymore, get out. It's a dangerous sport, right? Yeah. Like, the people are throwing strikes. These guys are trained killers, and you're going to get hurt if you aren't sure that you want to do this anymore. So we had that conversation a few years back with George St. Pierre, and he was sort of half in, half out, maybe the best ever at the time. And he just said, you know, once I don't know if I want to do this anymore, it's time to go. And I respected George for that. He sort of waffled on it a little bit afterwards, but similar here with Khabib. And I don't know what to make of it. Before we move off this, though, I wanted to talk briefly about there was another fight. To me, this wasn't a strong card. Normally, when you get a huge fight like this, they sell it on that fight and they don't have to load up. You know, if you don't have big names like this, you can sell a more well-rounded card and people will buy it for that reason. This one you were really buying just for the main event. But there was a fight, the second fight of the night, which was Lauren Murphy versus, and here we go again with the names, Lilia this is a Shinkarova. Got it. 126 pounds in the flyweight division. And Lauren Murphy has been around a long time. She's 37 years old. And she had won all of her decisions by knockout. And she wins this one with a rear naked choke, gets her to submit. And this is a woman that has been doing this for a long time, has never gotten a sniff at the flyweight title. And I think that's probably what's next. And this fight had, early on, when you watch the promos, you watch the tweets, all this stuff, it seemed very respectful. They were just getting along. Oh, I have a lot of respect for her. She's a great fighter, both ways, all this stuff. And then at some point, Shinkarova, this last week or so, says, I don't know why Lauren Murphy hasn't just retired. She's 37. She has nothing to offer anymore. This is just before her first fight ever in the UFC, and you're showing this kind of disrespect to a veteran. All of a sudden, Lauren Murphy is fired up, and she threw a back fist in the first round that I swear would have shattered my jaw, and I'm twice this woman's size. Like, she would have left me laid out on the floor. And I think she's got to be next for a title shot in that flyweight division. To me, that was one of the most entertaining, well, beyond the main event, it was probably the second most entertaining fight on the card. And, you know, you got to be careful in a sport like this. If you're going to fire up a veteran like that and say, you should have just retired, you should just get out of my way, and all of a sudden you get choked out in the second round, it's going to set you back a bit and people lose a little respect for you. So that was a fascinating one as well.
I will say, I've always admired, I'm not a huge UFC fan, so I don't know a whole lot about, you know, what I'm talking about. There may be people listening who can find a counter argument to me right away, and that's fine. But I've always admired the way the UFC markets its women's division,
yeah,
or it's the women's side. Like, it's marketed the exact same way that the men's is marketed, mm-hmm, which I know sounds super simple, but in other sports is just unheard of. And we don't get to see that. We were talking about women's hockey earlier, but like, if women's hockey was just given a fraction of the, if we marketed it the same way that we do the men's,
right,
in that we're focusing on the athletes and the quality of the sport and not, you know, why we need to grow the game. Let's just market the game. Let's just show the game,
right,
for what it is for this matchup. And UFC has always been really good at that. Like, they've always marketed the women's matches the exact same way.
Yeah.
The women's cards the exact same way they do the men's, and that it's this athlete versus this athlete. It's not why this match is important. I know I keep calling it a match. I know it's probably not, but that's why this card
works,
is important,
yeah,
for the growth of the sport. No, it's this athlete versus this athlete.
They market stars. They find people who are connecting,
exactly,
with the audience, people who are doing crazy things or who are dominant, and they'll market the shit out of them. And Ronda Rousey was the first woman to come in and do that, and she was doing all this stuff in Strikeforce, and they created the women's division for her because she was selling pay-per-views for a competitor. And they're like, well, then, mm-hmm, we need to sign her here and bring people here. And I know that sounds like a cynical whatever, but that's what you want. That is the business. She's a star. Bring her in. Who,
yeah,
cares whether she, you know. So they create this whole thing around her, and eventually Holly Holm stops her stiff in like her fourth or fifth fight or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, holy shit. Now we have a division. You're not just marketing this one woman anymore. And I mentioned the flyweight champion there that Lauren Murphy is looking to get a hold of. That's, and her first name's escaping me right now because there's been a ton of Europeans on these shows. I know her last name is Shevchenko. She's the flyweight champion, and she's going to fight next month. I'll be surprised if she's not the main event. Like, she's in, again, I know I've used this term, she's a killer. Like, she is dominant. She is maybe the most dominant champion in any division in the UFC. People want to watch that. And you can build a card around that, and people will buy that card because she's that good, and you want to see what she's going to do to this next poor sucker stepping into the octagon with her, right? Like,
well,
it's
exactly
incredible. So
there's something
to
be said for marketing stars.
Yeah.
I know as hockey fans, we just don't see that enough,
right?
Like, the NHL doesn't market, hockey in general doesn't market its stars,
right,
enough. And so when you have a sport that does, mm-hmm, in a league or a, you know, organization that
Valentina
gets,
Shevchenko, sorry, if it's going to make me
go
crazy. I got it. Sorry.
I was going to say, I wasn't going to be correcting you.
But it was going to make me insane. Yes. So.
But no, that's how you promote a sport is the stars. And it's as simple as that. And, you know, a league that does that better than I think any other, maybe aside from the NBA, is the NFL,
yep,
right? Like they get how to market their stars, and that's why they are the marketing machine that they are, that happens to sell a football product. It's because they've tapped into, you know, not only this insane urge that we all have to sit around on a Sunday and eat trash and drink beer and watch football, but also they've figured out how to market their stars. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to be marketing someone like Daniel Jones in that face plant for,
yeah,
the next little while.
Honestly, I think that video will get enough view on its own, whether they want to market it or not.
I have watched that so many times.
It's hysterical.
And like, you can see it come. I know that everyone, like, by the time people listen to this, they've probably talked about it ad nauseum, but like, you can see it coming from like 10, 15 yards.
He's into the
out.
Wobble. He's like, oh.
He starts to wobble, and you can just tell his body's going a little too fast for his legs to catch up. And oh, you just knew in that moment you are going to be part of a top 10 for decades, man. Like, my kids are going to be watching the SportsCenter top 10 that this guy is on, that poor bastard.
Forever.
Forever.
No, you're right. But, and it's and part of that is the power, unfortunately, for this young man. That is part of the power of the NFL, is everyone has seen it. It's made its way around social media. And unfortunately, sometimes that works, you know, against them as well, or at least it should. And the things that they do can get caught up in the press. And this is probably a positive, that when they try and sneak dirty shit past people, it gets caught up anyway and everyone notices it. And we're seeing that this week with Antonio Brown signing back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah. Yeah. That was some pretty big news. And as a Patriots fan, like, Antonio Brown I have to bring that up just so I remind people to hate me. I'm not surprised at all that he went to the Bucs. Apparently he and Tom Brady were very close, and Tom Brady basically made it his mission to get Antonio Brown back. But like, I've talked about Antonio Brown a lot in the past, and that, like, I think the guy, and if you're unfamiliar with his off-field issues, like, just Google him. It won't take long for you to be filled in, but the guy has some serious issues. And I mean that sincerely. I think he has some mental health problems and needs help. Right. And, you know, his most recent issue is, and I'm not excusing this at all, like, the guy was accused of sexual assault days after being signing with the Pats. And as a result of a few other things, he was then suspended.
Yeah.
What drives me nuts is that, you know, like, him being accused of sexual assault was not ultimately what led to him being reprimanded.
Right.
Because we've seen the NFL in numerous cases kind of find their way around those kinds of things. But as a Patriots fan, it drove me nuts that he was on my team after that happened. And even coming into that, you knew he had issues. You knew he had behavior. You know, he was problematic in many ways.
Well, he acted like a jackass in Oakland. He basically somehow negotiated his own way out of a good situation in Pittsburgh at the time. And that's with all locker room or football related shit. And then you start to hear about the assault things. And I know you referenced the sexual assault. There's another woman who's accused him of basically shoving her to the ground and leaving her kind of scraped up. Like, this isn't a first time kind of guy. And you wonder whether he wouldn't be way better. Forget us as the fans, forget the league, forget the Bucks. You wonder if he wouldn't be better served to be getting some help and out of the public spotlight, right? Because he's deserved everything he's got coming now because of his actions, but is he prepared to properly handle it? Is he prepared to, again, like, no sympathy, but you're probably better off getting out of the public eye right now and figuring out what the fuck's wrong with you, right? Like, because he's made so many mistakes.
And don't get me wrong, like, I'm the first person to advocate for, hey, you know, you're accused of assault in any fashion, like, GTFO, I'm out. But at the same time, I think it is smarter to look at it like, what help does this person need?
Right.
Because we talked about this a lot on TSN with Roberto Osuna, like, when he was accused of domestic violence, and, you know, the Jays essentially cut him loose in you know, sidestepping it. They did trade him, but it was essentially just getting him off their roster. There were a lot of experts who had been on sports radio around that time who said, like, you know, when someone is violent, their employer cutting ties with them often leads to more violence. So instead of firing them or trading them or what have you, employers should be providing them with resources and, you know, therapy or whatever, counseling, whatever it is they need to get to the root of what is causing this violence. Why are you behaving this way, so that you can stop it?
Like, yes, you're out, but we're now going to help you. Like, we're not cutting you loose completely. You're done playing for us. We don't want you to, but there needs to be resources to make sure that this doesn't become a recurring thing. And I think that has to, you know, come from the PA and the, you know, before you're going to be welcomed back into the league, you have to complete this and go through this and that. But I do. I think it's so important to get out of the public eye where it everything is just exacerbated, right? And there will be people, you know, probably correctly. I don't want to, but let's say he goes to therapy and let's say he understands what he's done and all these sorts of things. There will be people who never want to give him a second chance. I think that's okay. I think everyone's entitled to make their decisions on that. But you can't go through that process in the public eye. You just can't.
No.
And then to skip going through it at all and just sign again to a new team, yeah, he's going to get roasted and he probably deserves it. Like, this is a bad move all around.
Yeah, it's very, very, and this is why I have such issues with it as a Patriots fan. Like, you know, I get that Tom Brady is not the most well-liked person in the world. And
certainly not
and
in this
even
room.
As a, no, even as a Patriots fan, I will admit he's not my favorite person in the world. You know, I, as a quarterback and watching him play football is different, but him advocating for Antonio Brown and bringing him into the Bucs, like I just, that drives me nuts to see someone use their power in that way, right? Tom Brady knows his power in the NFL. If he says something, it will happen.
Yeah.
And to use that power in a way that I don't think helps Antonio Brown, but certainly doesn't help, you know, the victims of his violence and his behavior. That just drives me nuts. And I know I sound like a disgruntled Patriots fan who, okay, he's not on my team anymore, and so I don't like him. But for the last couple of years, Tom Brady had done things like this that just drive me nuts. And I think this is a prime example of him using his power in a bad way.
Well, there's so much of that going around, and there's so much hypocrisy, right? Like, whether it's him, whether it's the league, whether, you know, we're going to sell pink jerseys with the breast cancer awareness stuff and all these sorts of things that are supposed to on the surface say, look how much we love our women fans. And then you pull back the curtain, even just a tiny little bit, and you go, oh, okay, I see. Like, you actually don't really give a shit. And it sucks that Tom Brady is a part of that. And a big part of this, like, let's not dance around it, is they're 4-2, and I think it's New Orleans. It's right on their heels there in Tampa. He wants a good player. He wants to give them a boost. So, I don't care what else has gone on. I don't care about whatever. I'll have to answer a couple questions in a press conference one time, and then that'll be the end of it. And in theory, he's getting a good player. But now, I don't know whether Antonio Brown is still capable of delivering like he once was. We're going to find out, I guess. But it's such transparent bullshit to be able to look at all the things that they claim they do for women in the NFL and then go, yeah, but here's this guy. You know,
they still employ Ben Roethlisberger and Ezekiel Elliott, and for a period of time Greg Hardy, and the list goes on of men who have been violent towards women, and you know, the NFL has in one way or another either accepted it or covered it up in some way, and it's just become, you know,
it's a scale. How much of it is good for business? How much of it? When do they get to a point where they become bad for business? And at that point, it's easy to take a stand. But as long as they're still good for business, as long as some people still want him in the league, as long as he can still help Tom Brady win, then we'll tolerate some shit here. And
win at all costs.
Yeah. And it's kind of gross.
That's the NFL's motto, right? And that's why, as a football fan, like, I will admit, I look forward to Sunday.
Sure.
More than anything else, I love sitting on my couch and drinking beer and eating crap and watching football. I get that. I'm human. And I'm a sucker. Every year I say the same thing. I'm not going to follow the NFL as much this year. Like, you feel, as a human being, you feel kind of problematic doing it. And then the first week week one happens and you're like, okay, I'm in.
But we all do it, right? Like, you're pissed at the NHL for their lack of diversity and things like that. You know, but as soon as they drop the puck, you're like, go Leafs. Yeah.
I'm definitely a sucker for that. I'll admit, like, I we talk about it. We've talked about it on this show, and we talk about it on That's What She Said. Like, you know, you can be a fan and recognize where the problems exist, right? And we all take a lot of joy from sports. And you know what? This year in 2020, we all deserve some joy.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
We all deserve to take what we can. And I think you can hold your favorite league and your favorite sport accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But still be a fan. And, you know, with the NFL, that gets hard. That gets really, really hard. But I'll admit, you know, it's something that I think we're continuously fighting against, and we're going to continue doing it. And Antonio Brown is just like the latest iteration of this, and there will be more, unfortunately. But, you know, not to bring the podcast down to a just a
well,
wonderful level on a Friday evening, or sorry, Saturday evening.
What do you, you know, his bullshit aside, what do you think he's got left in the tank? Is he going to make a difference for Tampa?
No, like this is what also this is what confuses me. Like, he got an 8-game suspension, but he wasn't with a team. So like, how does he serve an 8-game suspension when he's not under contract with the team? So he's not technically missing 8 games,
right? Like I could currently be suspended by the Leafs. It doesn't matter much because they're not interested. But I could be serving one right now.
and there may be something that I don't understand there, and I'm sure someone listening maybe knows more about that. But like, that is one thing that I just can't get my head around. I'm like, doesn't he have to sign with a team and then serve an 8-game suspension? But what do I know? You know what? When he was with the Pats, I will say this: he had a few. The Pats had a deep ball for the first time since Randy Moss, when Antonio Brown was in town. Very, very short lived, and you know, his time with the Pats was not very long. But in the games he did play, I mean, Jesus, he's a deep threat.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the Pats didn't have that, and it was very, very helpful. Tom Brady loves that.
Yeah.
And you know that if Tom Brady loves you,
you're gonna
get the ball.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a job, and you're going to get, you know, all the protection in the world, and you are going to be set up to succeed. So I think, you know, I think he'll do fine. I think he's got the people behind him that allow for that. But at the same time, I genuinely have no idea what he's been doing with himself since he last played in the NFL.
There's a little bit of like the Houston Astros in this, right? Where really no fans, because that guy should have to suffer the wrath of touring around the league and hearing from the public what they think of you right now. And the Astros got off light because of having no fans. He's going to get off light because of having limited fans, at least around the league in most cities. Man, like karma, you'd at least like to see you have a bad day while you're doing it, right?
Like, exactly. What, like, 2020 has been unfair for several reasons, and one of them is that we didn't get to see the Houston Astros go on a grand tour of the MLB. That was what I was looking forward to about the season.
Oh, man, just for sure.
Ripped apart in every stadium they went to, and Antonio Brown's no different. You want to see him suffer at the hands of, especially, like, I mean, they're not going to play in New England, but, like, if he happened to go back to a team that had a game that went through New England, I would have loved to have seen that. But we're not going to see it, unfortunately.
Doesn't look like it
this year. So again, 2020 just keeps on delivering. How's your Mill Street, by the way?
It's a little plain. It's exactly what I should have expected from a 3.5 here. And like, it's fine. Maybe it's keeping me, because I did have a drink or two during the fight. So maybe the 3.5 is what I need right now. But it's not what I wanted. It might be what I needed.
I think I tried the Big Little Lager a few months ago. And yeah, like, it was the same kind of reaction. Like, you know, if I'm looking to drink
just
several,
trying to maintain. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a good camping beer. Like,
there you go.
Start drinking before.
There's nothing wrong with it. And it is what it promises. But it's lacking a little flavor. You had mentioned something before we got started about a stout story.
Yeah, well, it was mainly just that I've tried a few stouts recently, and you and I have chatted a lot about, you know, you love stouts, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of getting into it, but like, I don't like the smoky stouts, and I know for you, it's like the smokier the better.
Yeah.
So I've tried to expand my palate a little bit in the last few weeks, and I tried one a couple weeks ago. I was at Ridge Rock on their patio, and I had their Nitro Stout, the Irish Stout.
Oh,
that was tasty.
I haven't had that one. I had their American Stout when it was out during the spring. I have not yet tried the Irish.
It was good.
Okay.
It was smoky. Yes. I think you'd like it. It wasn't too smoky for me, but it was just a half pint of it, but I really, really liked it. And then I had also tried the Cobblestone for the first time very recently, and like, I genuinely love
that. It's a nice
beer. I can't stop thinking about it, kind of thing.
So I'll advise you on that one. Now, maybe I'm fooling. I don't know where you tried that or whatever. I don't like it as much, you know, canned as I have on location somewhere when they can pour you a nice pint of it or whatever. I still have bought it from time to time, but every time I do, I'm kind of like, oh, that's not as good as I remember. And then the next time I have it on tap, I'm like, yes, that's what I remember. So it seems to be a little different, and that does happen with some of them. But I can say for sure on the cobblestone that it is better draft than it is canned.
And I find that is pretty common with the nitro stouts. You need it in on a tap.
Yeah.
Like that's the way it's meant to be served. Even with Guinness. I love Guinness and I drink a lot of Guinness at home and I have in 2020 because I've had no choice. But you know, you can shake it all you want. You can pour it as aggressively as you want and it's not going to have the same flavor and consistency as having it on draft is. So I'll try a cobblestone in a can and I'll see, you know, where that falls, but I'm not surprised at all because I feel like with the nitro stouts, you want them on draft.
I recorded the other day with Graham Nichols, better known to Sens fan as a Sens fan. No S, apparently. There's only one he has left out there. The sixth Sens. That'll be coming up on an upcoming episode. We've been a little Sens heavy here lately, so I'm waiting a bit to drop that one. But he and I both...
I love Graham. Graham's a great guy.
And he was a lot of fun to talk to, and I think people are going to enjoy that episode. But when we were setting it up, he was getting big into the concept. He's like, so we're going to have a couple beers during this? I'm like, yeah, like that's great. So he decides he's going to order from Dominion, which I haven't done in a long time. And just to be kind of on the same page, I'm like, well, I'll do that too. And it's not mandatory, obviously. I don't think you and I have ever had the same beer during one of the shows. But I thought, let's try and get on the same page. And so anyway, he ordered from Dominion. I did the same. They had some stuff that I had not tried before. And they normally do like a lot of IPAs and stuff, which... You know me and IPAs, I can take them or leave them. But they had two new stouts and they had a Pilsner and stuff like that. And one of them was called the Time Zero Stout. That's the one that I had with Graham. And it's a standard kind of 4.5%. It was a really nice stout. And we'll talk about that one on that episode. There's one still sitting in my fridge called the Small Stout, I believe it is. And it is a 10% ABV.
Jesus.
I know. And it's called, they describe it as a pistachio stout. And I kind of like, the same way I like the smoky ones, I kind of like when they say that there's a little nut to this one, right? Or some of them you can have a little coconut or peanut or whatever. I don't know.
Okay.
Nut. I don't mind that either. I'm intrigued by the 10% pistachio stout. Now,
that's like a bottle of wine.
I know. So Graham, during the episode, he started off with that. And then moved into an 8% IPA. So he had the pedal down during the...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Dive right into it.
Right. He's a coke-header. I respect that, right? He was hitting it hard.
I respect the process, man.
For sure. So he was well ahead of me in terms of ABV on the show. But I'm looking forward to trying that one, the pistachio 10% stout from Dominion. And we'll do that on an upcoming episode for
sure. I'll add to my list and plan definitely around it.
Yes.
It sounds like I need to hunker down for the night.
It's a closer.
I am curious, and this is really, really random, but I don't know if you've ever tried the Release the Hounds. I think it's a black IPA.
I have.
Big break.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I liked it. Probably because it has that kind of crossover, right, between the IPA and something a little darker. I haven't had it a lot, but I have had it several times. Rob used to keep several of those here in studio for when he was coming around and when we were able to do these in person. It was one of his favorites. It's a really nice beer. I do like that one. Have you tried it?
I have. Yeah. My husband went through a phase where that was like the only beer he drank.
Right.
And he absolutely loved it. I didn't mind it. It's very smoky.
Yes.
So it was a little too much for me. And admittedly, I think at that time, I don't even think I was drinking Guinness. This was a couple of years ago. So my palate for stouts has expanded a little bit since then. So
right.
I'm looking to try and I'm going to give it a try very soon again.
This is it. You have to circle back a bit sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Like your palate evolves. And this was, I think we talked about, I had to go back to Muskoka, right? Because maybe I wasn't fair to them the first time. I wasn't quite there yet. Had to come back around, and it's been better this time. So sometimes you do have to kind of allow for that palate development.
Oh, absolutely. I remember early on, I think I was maybe 21 or 22, and my beer palate was like Coors Light or Keith's if I was feeling fancy. And Keith's is called an IPA. It's an India Pale Ale. Yep. So I thought that's what an IPA was.
Yeah.
And we went down to Lake Placid for a weekend and I ordered an IPA from some restaurant and it was an actual IPA. I took one sip of it and went, what the hell is this? It tastes like flour.
It's like the first time you order
flour.
An iced tea in the US, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, oh,
like,
shit.
Where's the sugar?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want a cold orange Pico tea.
Right.
It was exactly that. I was like, what the hell is this? And now that I love IPAs, and the hoppier the better. I don't even know what that beer was that I tried, but I think about it a lot where I'm like, I wonder if I tried that now and what I would think. I'm sure it would be fine.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. I think that happens a lot.
It's crazy. And it's getting into that season, right? It's cold.
Yes. It's porter season. Like, it's stout season.
It's stout season. It's thick. English bitter season.
Yes.
And I love the English style beers around this time. I was drinking a Boddington's.
Yeah, you mentioned. So where does that come? Where does that stem from that you finally decided today I'm going to try Boddington's? Because that's one of my favorite imports.
I ventured out to the great town of Perth, Ontario.
Ooh, yeah.
And I live in Almont, so I'm in a non-red zone going to another non-red zone. I'm completely within the legal confines of this.
Outside and, our quarantine zone.
Exactly. They had a Boddington's on tap, and my only experience with Boddington's was when I was a kid. I have relatives in Scotland, and they came to visit, and while they were here, they bought a few beers from the LCBO, and they left them in our fridge and obviously went home.
Right.
And one of them was the Guinness, the other was the Boddington's, and I had no idea what these beers were, but they sat in my mom's fridge for what had to have been a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, one day, they disappeared, and my brother is a couple years younger than me. And I guess he and his friends had thought, hey, we're going to try these beers when mom isn't home.
Right.
And, they smashed them. Apparently, it tastes like crap. And they crushed the beer cans. They put them in the recycling thinking, mom will never find these.
Brutal rookie mistake.
I know. What an idiot. And so my mom found them. And, like, she was so amused by the fact that, A, you thought you were going to hide this from me in the recycling. And, yeah. B, how did that five-year-old beer that's been sitting in my fridge taste?
Well, and Guinness is not an entry-level beer for anybody, let alone a five-year-old.
And even Boddington's. Like, Boddington's is like an English pale ale, but it doesn't have any carbonation. So it's almost like a nitro in the same sense. So it's a very, very weird consistency. And I saw that they had that on tap, and that was the first thing that popped into my mind. So I was like, you know what? I'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tasty. I talked about this a lot. I love the English-style beers, like Crooked Mile here in Almont.
Right.
My favorite breweries. They got a lot of really good English beers. And it's getting to that time of year where, you know, it's a little cold, and that's the kind of beer I'm craving. And it was like a perfect English bitter with the same kind of consistency as a Guinness, where you've got that nice like foam on top and nitro kind of consistency. It was super tasty. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, that's one of the ones, and I don't know if they're closed now or if it's soon. I read that the Highlander pub there down in the market was closing up. Which is a Scottish place, but they always carried Boddington's, or at least a lot of the time they did. And it was one that I went in and tried a couple times and really liked it. And a couple other places downtown had it as well. It became one of my favorite imports too. I got to tell you, like, I got into the import thing because I had some friends who were into it well before I got into the craft thing. And I was kind of like touring around, and you're into the LCBO, and like, oh, I'll try this, and there's a Tetley's that, or Tennant's over here, or whatever it might be. And then the craft thing exploded, and now you're able to do it more locally. So I sort of moved off of a lot of the import stuff, but I've always enjoyed the Boddington. So I was curious to see how you ended up on that one. But the other thing I sent over to you today, the Reese's infused vodka.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something you have any interest at all in trying? Is that up your alley? Are you experimenting with that kind of thing? Or is that just a hard pass?
Well, here's the thing.
The article didn't paint it all that nice.
No. We all have that one alcohol that we hit too hard in high school.
Yeah.
Gave us the worst hangover of our lives, and we've never touched it since. And
tequila.
For a lot of people, tequila is number one.
It's still at 37 years old. I haven't had it since I was like 17 years old.
Never
leave
you.
Nope, not coming back.
That level of trauma, it will stay with you. Mm-hmm. For me, that's raspberry vodka.
Okay.
And you can imagine why. since I was 17 years old, haven't touched stuff. And vodka, you know, just by proxy has always been, I smell it, I taste it, just bleh. I can't.
Okay.
I just immediately want to vomit. So the second you sent me that, I think I've like had that gag reaction of no, thank you. But I will say this: like, I also I love like Bailey's in my coffee, or like an Irish coffee kind of thing. I wonder what this would taste like in that context.
Right.
Of putting it in your coffee or in like a sweet after a meal kind of thing.
So like my sisters used to try stuff like that. And sometimes they're pre-mixed thing. Like there's one out there. I think it's called or made by I think it's called Wild Vines. And it's like a birthday cake flavored vodka. You're like, there's no way you're going to make a vodka taste. And I'm not much of a vodka person. If I'm going to mix a drink, it's probably going to be rum and anything. Really, the Pink Whitney is the first vodka I've had in, I couldn't even tell you how long. And I have some of it here at the house. We've talked about it throughout the summer. But I was like, there's no way that's going to taste like birthday cake. And they're both like, no, like for real. It does. So I try, like, that's fucking birthday cake. Like, it's right there. Like, that's exactly. And so from that, like, I started to be more open to, I'm still not like a vodka person, I'm more intrigued by, all right, let's see what you're able to do here. Let's see what you can make out of this. And so at Halloween, I guess, you know, Reese's and candy infused vodkas are back around. I love anything Reese's.
And okay.
It is by far my favorite. I don't even know what you call it. Might be my favorite. If you asked me to give up Reese's for life or beer for life, it would be a very, very difficult decision.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Anything Reese's has my attention. I would be nervous because of what you just alluded to, that if you have a bad experience, that it might turn me off Reese's in the long term. And that would, that would scare me a little. So we will share the article in all the usual places. But essentially, yeah, there was a couple different ways of doing it, but people were, you know, kind of creating this weird Reese's vodka, whatever. And I'm intrigued by it. I got to tell you,
give it a try. Let me know how it goes. Have one.
Yes.
That's my advice. Have one. Because you don't want this. Don't ruin Reese's for yourself.
No.
Don't take that joy away from you. And now I'm with you on Reese's. Reese's peanut butter cups are delicious.
That's like the greatest thing about Halloween. It's just.
Oh, yeah. Buying candy. And this year we have full permission to buy candy for ourselves and not give it to
exactly.
kids. So guess what I'm doing?
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think I've taken up enough of your time tonight, Matt. I think you know what? This is a short episode for us.
Honestly, yeah. The last couple have been pushing up close to two. So,
but I think we got to a lot of good topics. Mm-hmm. I think we touched on the really important stuff, and that's Reese's peanut butter and vodka, and whether or not it belongs.
I'll keep you
remains to be seen. That's your homework for this time around. Go and try that, and then next time we record, I want a full report.
I'm going to chicken out and just eat Reese's Pieces while drinking Pink Whitney's.
It's okay. I'll do the same, but with Snickers.
What is the old, I don't know if you're a Simpsons person, or the old, hiya poo, can I get some of that Skittle Brow? You know, that beer with Skittles in it. Like, Mr. Simpson, I don't think such a thing exists. I'm like, all right, well, then just give me a six pack and some Skittles. I think I can get into that.
Simpson, what you're licking is just blood and sugar. Oh, I knew that.
Exactly.
Oh, Hapu. All right. I think we've touched on everything.
I think so too. Yeah. No, this was a good one.
No, I appreciate the Simpsons reference too. Anybody who can quote the Simpsons that obscurely, I'm a big fan of.
Well, I'm still waiting for somebody to come through and invent the Skittle Bro.
One, I'm surprised it doesn't exist.
Honestly, that's got to be like a reference from like 95. Like you'd think by now.
That's early
someone,
days.
Yeah.
Early days in the Simpsons.
Yeah.
I was not to go down a rabbit hole, but I was just watching an episode of Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain, and they referenced the episode where he's trying to gain weight.
Yes.
And Dr. Nick.
Dr. Hibbert. Oh, not Dr. Nick Riviera.
Riviera, yeah. He recommends like rub something against a piece of paper, and if it goes see-through, it's your window to weight gain.
I always remember that episode for him having, he thinks he hasn't gained enough, but it's because his belly's resting on the towel rack.
Dad, you're on the towel rack.
Ooh, ew.
Dad, it says non-toxic. Well, that's a good thing.
Next episode be conducted entirely in Simpsons quotes.
Next time, absolutely.
Over Skittle Brow.
With some Duff beers.
Yes. Nice.
Or Skittle Brow, either one. All right. As I mentioned, you can find Tall Can Audio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You can find me on Twitter at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S.
Screeds.
Screeds.
Sorry.
Exactly. It's okay. I've been pronouncing my name wrong this whole time.
Yeah, I've got it figured out. Don't worry.
Thank you for setting me straight. All right. As always, Matt, thanks so much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
This was fun. I'm glad you were open to doing this again, and we will keep them coming because the public has been demanding it. We get messages,
we
get our tweets.
We have to give the public what they
want. Of course. People have been calling out for more Michaela, so we will deliver.
I appreciate that person, whoever you are. All right, we will see you next time on Tall Can Audio.
Now, y'all ain't got nothing else for me to drink, I'm a haul ass. No, I'm serious. I'm about to haul ass if y'all have no better shit than this to drink.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.